Political leaders of real vision and strength did not ever come forward in large numbers in the Confederacy. They didn't come forward and deal effectively with many of the huge problems facing an undermanned Confederacy with far fewer resources than their opponent. This absence of top quality political leadership was striking to many people at the time, and it has been striking to historians since, especially when you contrast it with the amount of really brilliant political leadership that you can find in the late 18th century and early 19th century in the South, with Jefferson and Madison and Washington and Monroe and John C. Calhoun and Henry Clay and Andrew Jackson. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of very prominent Southern politicians in our history leading down to the Civil War. You don't have a great outpouring of political talent during the Confederacy. Let's look at how the war began to expose strains in the Confederate political system now. Part of the problem was that the Confederate Congress was a mediocre body by any standard. Many Congresses in U.S. history have been mediocre as well, but the Confederate Congress was very mediocre, was reluctant to make hard decisions. Again, many Congresses are reluctant to make hard decisions. It often responded to very large problems with measures that came too late and only went part way toward solving the problem. They were very reluctant to pass significant tax legislation, for example. The Congress spent tremendous amounts of time on procedural questions, listened to orations of interminable length and minimal substance, and witnessed an enormous amount of internal bickering on the floor of the houses. Both houses met in secret in the Confederacy, and neither of them published a record of deliberations. That led to public rumors and cynicism about just what the Congress was doing. What's going on behind those closed doors was a question frequently raised. There was very serious absenteeism in the Confederate Congress. Representatives from occupied areas often had a hard time making it to Richmond. So you would find yourself with many empty seats in the Confederate Congress, even during important debates. The touchy sense of Southern honor and the tradition of Southern violence seemed to have full reign in the Confederate Congress. Debates often degenerated into meaningless quarreling, and fights were common. For example, in 1863, Senator Benjamin H. Hill of Georgia used an inkwell to smash the face of William L. Yancey and cut him badly. William L. Yancey of Alabama, whom we've seen as a fire eater earlier in the course. Congressman Henry Foote of Tennessee employed a variety of weapons in the House chamber. He was seen armed with a bowie knife, a revolver. He even used an umbrella once to attack a fellow member of that august body. In September 1863, the journal clerk of the House murdered the chief clerk of the House in Capitol Square. And aggravating this tawdry image was widespread public drunkenness on the part of members of Congress. Senator Lewis T. Wigfall of Texas was among the worst offenders in this regard. He was often seen inebriated around Richmond. Pardon me, one South Carolinian wrote to Senator R.M.T. Hunter of Virginia, is the majority always drunk? The people are beginning to think so. So we don't have a really effective body to look at in the Confederate Congress. Now, they admittedly faced tremendous obstacles to running this war, but they didn't do as well as they might have been expected to do. I think several factors contributed to their being ineffective. One is the tradition of obstructionism that had grown in the late antebellum years. Representatives and senators from the South were used to trying to prevent the North from doing something to them, to block legislation supported by the majority in the North. They'd been conditioned to think in those terms, those negative terms rather than positive terms. How can we stop the North rather than how can we advance our own agenda? And I think that tendency carried over into the Confederacy. A number of able politicians also went into the Army. A pair of Georgians are prominent in this regard, Howell Cobb and Robert Toombs. Now, they were terrible soldiers, both of them, especially Howell Cobb. They would have done much better had they turned all of their talents to the political end of things, I think, rather than the military end. Overall, only about a third of the members of the Confederate Congress had served in the U.S. Congress, were veterans in that sense. In comparison, more than half of the members of the United States Congress during the war had pre-war experience at that level.